Hi, my name is Anne McElhenney.
And I'm Phelan McAleer.
Welcome to the Anne and Phelan Scoop Daily Virus, where we discuss the latest news, views and advice and madness of the pandemic. And we're going to have a bit of all of that today, by the way. It is November the 17th.
It is indeed.
Week 35, that's 8¾ months of the 2-week flatten the curve lockdown. And it is a special boy's birthday today. It's our godson Eric's birthday today. He is 3. We're going to talk more about him later on. But what else is happening in the show today, Phelan?
Gruesome Newsom is an awful person, but we knew that. And so are the rest of the Californian lawmakers. But we knew that also, and we were looking at their latest madness and terribleness. And so is Governor Granny Killer of New York, but we all knew that as well. So we'll be looking at just how awful they are.
And the New York Times is shocked. Shocked, I say. At the destruction of the lives of young people that they helped to bring about.
Yes.
And our local school district just doesn't seem to care much about young people. And cancer patients, by the way, just so you know, in case you didn't know already, are no longer a priority in the medical system, apparently. And we will finally finish the show today with some pandemic advice. And we have some happy pandemic advice. Stay tuned to the end. Actually, because, you know, we have some tough stories, but actually the end of today's virus is cheerful.
Yeah. Well, so let's we've got a lot to get through. So let's talk about Governor Newsom.
Oh, God.
So he now...
Do we have to?
So we've been living under, the almost the top tier of restrictions here in Los Angeles. But other parts, and we know people who've moved out of Los Angeles.
Just to literally get away from it.
To get into the gym, to go to places,
to have a more normal life.
To go indoors to restaurants. And Governor Gruesome has now decided he's going to hit the emergency brake.
The emergency
brake. And force 94% of California into the most restrictive opening tier. But, but he apologizes.
But he apologizes.
For breaking his own, for breaking the lockdown to attend a friggin' bloody well,
five-star Michelin star,
a dinner party, a 50th birthday party for a lobbyist at a Michelin star restaurant up in Napa.
Up in Yountville. The French Laundry, very famous, the most expensive restaurant in California, where
probably
you can have
America.
A tasting menu for $800. But you know what? Gruesome Newsom, let them eat cake Newsom, decided, it wasn't even... that it was his daughter's something or his wife's anniversary, whatever. No, for some nothing burger event, he went and broke all the rules that he's...
On everyone else.
Forcing on everyone else.
It wasn't a nothing burger. Maybe lobbyists are very important in his world.
Maybe.
And then, of course, the fish rots at the top. And as a quote from a Breitbart story, as California braces for curfew, some lawmakers gather in Maui. Several California lawmakers are in Maui, Hawaii this week for an annual legislative convention despite rising coronavirus cases that led Governor Gavin Newsom to threaten a statewide curfew on Monday.
He then went ahead and... the curfew
He's not even talking a curfew. Wild. It's wild. He's restricting 94% of the state to basically closing businesses, but now he's even talking about a curfew. So...
in the midst of all this,
the lawmakers head off to Hawaii
for
5 days of policy discussions and schmoozing with corporate sponsors.
Why can't you policy discuss in the middle of, in a Walmart
on a
car
Zoom,
park?
By Zoom,
What's wrong with Zoom?
The conference has been hosted by the Independent Voter Project every November. Actually, the lack of Independent Voter Project for more than a decade is taking place this week at the Fairmont in Maui's southwest shore.
Nice.
The event is smaller than normal, but 120 people are staying there, including legislators from California, Texas, and Washington. I mean, these people are disgusting.
They're the scum of the earth. They have no shame.
Yes. And talking of people who do have shame, 3 New York sheriffs say they won't enforce Cuomo's Thanksgiving limits.
Good for them.
Yes.
This
is from the New York Post. 3 more upstate New York sheriffs have announced their refusal to enforce the state's private gathering limit on Thanksgiving.
In a scathing Facebook post on Saturday, Fulton County Sheriff Richard Giardino questioned the legality of Governor Cuomo's newly instituted 10-person cap on parties and other gatherings. Frankly, he says, I'm not sure I could sustain a constitutional, it could sustain a constitutional challenge in court for several reasons, including your house is your castle, the sheriff wrote in Saturday Post.
So just a bit.
And as a sheriff with a law degree, I couldn't in good faith attempt to defend it in court. I won't.
Just to say this again, they have a 10-person cap on parties.
It's not much of a party.
Go screw yourself.
Yeah, go screw yourself.
And, you know, and by the way, come over here and arrest Governor Grusome for his 12-person party.
14, I think, even.
Whatever, you know. So anyway, lots of sheriffs have said it, you know. Governor, lots of sheriffs. Last Friday, 2 days after Cuomo announced it, Erie Sheriff Tim Howard said he wouldn't do it. Other sheriffs, hopefully these restrictions are just going to disappear because people won't follow them.
But I'm happy to see, you know, people like that, leaders in those positions push back against this, because there seems to be an incredible level of compliance that's disheartening. COVID, you know, lockdown was meant to work, and then we wouldn't need another lockdown, but we had a lockdown, we all complied, and you know what, it didn't work, and then, you know what, let's have more lockdowns. But the really sad, dreadful, awful story from the New York Times, and I want to spend quite a bit of time on this because I think it's really important. The headline is in the New York Times, teens in COVID isolation, and a quote from one of these children, I felt like I was suffocating. Brilliant, you know, brilliant quote, and very, you can kind of really understand that. Remote learning lockdowns and pandemic uncertainty have increased anxiety and depression among adolescents and heightened concerns about their mental health. Wake up, the New York Times, you know, it took you a while to get to this amazing discovery.
Yeah, well, you were out there pushing fake stories about young people dying from COVID when they were actually dying from drug overdoses. Did you not think that might frighten people and lead to school closures and then spawn this mental contagion among young people?
You know, no, this is the New York Times.
Your
this
hands
is,
are not clean, New York Times.
No. Your hands are dirty, and not dirty, but dirty with, like, the literally with the blood of these innocents, by the way. Before the pandemic, and listen to this young person, Aya Raje's days were jam-packed. She woke up at 6:30 a.m. and took the subway to school. At night, she practiced kick flips with her skateboarding club and hosted Twilight movie nights for friends. You can totally get that, right? That vibe with this girl, right? Once her school in Brooklyn turned to remote learning starting last spring and continuing this fall, the days grew long and lonely. Nothing could distract her from the bleak news as she stared at her laptop for hours during virtual class. She couldn't sleep up until 4 a.m., her mind racing with anxiety. Here's what she said. I felt like I was trapped in my own little house and everyone was far away. Aya, she's 14, by the way, this girl, said, when you're with friends, you're completely distracted and you don't think about the bad stuff going on. During the beginning of quarantine, I was so alone. All the sad things I used to brush off, I realized I couldn't brush them off anymore. Students like Aya felt some relief earlier this fall when the schools reopened or whatever. But, you know, this is the New York Times, by the way. The New York Times, exactly as Phelan said, who have panicked people with these breathless stories of young people are going to die, young people are going to die.
Remember the fake story they had about the hockey coach?
Oh, yeah, the lovely young man. Yeah. And, of course, turns out that the guy died of an overdose, an opioid overdose. He had COVID, but that wasn't what... An opioid overdose is what killed him. Yeah. But the research shows here that adolescents... Back to the New York Times, the hateful New York Times. Research shows that adolescents depend on their friendships to maintain a sense of self-worth and to manage anxiety and depression. I totally get that. The friend group when you're a teenager is incredibly important. A recent study of 3,300 high school students found that nearly one-third reported feeling unhappy or depressed in recent months. And while it might seem counterintuitive for a generation used to bonding with friends via text, TikTok, Snapchat and Instagram, more than a quarter of those students said they did not feel connected to teachers, classmates, or their other social. A lot of adults assume teens have it easy, Aya said, but it's hitting us hardest.
I mean, this is the line here. You know, the proportion of children's emergency room visits related to mental health have increased significantly during the pandemic. You know, highlighting concerns about the psychological effects that lockdowns and social distancing have had on youth, according to a new analysis released on Thursday by the Centre for Disease Control and Prevention.
Well, CDC. Well, yeah. Shame on you, by the way.
Shame on all of you.
Shame on CDC, yeah, by the way.
Shame on the New York Times, too. These are just...
But actually, more, I'd almost say, I mean, obviously the New York Times are just appalling, but the CDC, who are supposed to have at their very centre the whole health, you know, and they've been at this whole health thing for ages, right? And an understanding about mental health, you know... Mm. What happened to you, CDC, that you suddenly forgot about mental health and forgot about the needs of children whose brains, by the way, aren't even formed properly until they're about 28 years old?
Here's the line. An important part of teenage development is the realization that peers, not just parents, can be a source of emotional support.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, wow.
Yeah. You're just learning that, the New York Times. My God, you could have got that from anyone off the street. The last thing, anyway, by this another young person talking about
Adolfo.
How they'd... Adolfo, and I just think it's so sad. I'd sleep all day, and he's, you know, he's from a large family. He's in a home with 15 people, and became very nocturnal because obviously all so many people are at home during the day that he became nocturnal to find some peace and quiet. Here's what he said. I'd sleep all day because my sister was up crying and there was barely any food, said Adolfo, 15, a classmate of Aya's, whose father was hospitalised with COVID and was unable to work for 4 months. Usually my friends would have helped me, but I didn't have them, so it was harder to deal with. I felt like I was suffocating.
Yeah.
So well done, New York Times. Well done, CDC. Well done, everyone, by the way, for forgetting the fact that we have more to us than a susceptibility to one virus. That there's more to us than that, and that there's more parts of our health that need attention.
But I mean,
tell me about our local school district in Santa Monica.
Over in Santa Monica, not, I suppose our local school district is Venice, but Santa over across the road. But the thing is, these are the smartest people. These people think they're the smartest people on the planet. Santa Monica parents, Santa Monica educators, you know, New York educators. But you know, lady here, Santa Monica, this is the headline, Santa Monica schools inch towards reopening.
This is from The Patch.
Yeah. Select special education programs will begin returning to campus over the next few weeks, but a full reopening is unlikely anytime soon.
This is for special education,
education, you know, they're going back to the drawing board. And since October 22nd, Los Angeles County schools have been allowed to let back 25% of students with disabilities.
25%.
So 75%
of children with disabilities are being neglected.
And 100% of all the other children.
And 100% of the rest.
I mean, it's a really long piece. But those opening paragraphs
are
just
enough.
Yeah, and they go to all these, oh, and this school district is allowing 10% of this. And it's just, it's madness. Madness.
Yeah, that 75% of children who have special needs are just like, whatever, we don't, your special needs aren't that special, actually, by the way, really, actually, you know what, we don't actually take your disability that seriously, we don't think you're that badly off at all,
care
actually,
for the most
you know, actually, you know what, really, you don't need special education, you don't need any special support, you know, if you don't need it now, you never need it at all, you know, that's what they're saying. I think that's what they're saying. They just don't take it seriously. And
well,
as I said,
you needed it or you didn't.
Yeah,
right?
You either needed it or you didn't. But apparently now, you know, these are just terrible people. Then we have an incredible story actually from Alex Berenson. This is Alex Berenson, who's former journalist for the New York Times, who's been a rock star, as we've said many times, on this virus. And he's on Twitter at Alex Berenson. And he basically has this story from a lady in Maryland whose 46-year-old husband was diagnosed a few days ago with kidney cancer. And I'm going to just read the whole thing. It's a letter she wrote to Alex Berenson. So the surgeon explained to my husband he will have to wait at least 3 months for surgery. I'm writing you
because COVID. The hospitals need to keep their beds open for COVID.
That was the excuse. So she's right, and she wrote to Alex Berenson, I'm writing to you today because I'm desperate for someone to shine a light on a neglected aspect of the COVID panic. And by the way, this is what we're all about here at the Unreported Story Society, telling stories that aren't getting reported, namely, or getting proper light on them, namely the countless cancer patients being denied potentially life-saving surgery due to COVID, and not because they are positive for COVID. No, the surgeries are being pushed out because hospitals need to keep beds open because maybe COVID. My 46-year-old husband was recently diagnosed with kidney cancer. He was asymptomatic of COVID, and the tumour was only discovered when he had his first and so far only gallbladder attack. The ER did a CT scan and said, you have gallstones and you have a kidney cancer. And you have a kidney cancer. Yeah. But we were lucky in a way because his tumour is 4 centimetres, about 1.5 inches right now. And there's a possibility that urgent surgery can both cure him and save his kidney. Apparently 4 centimetres is the cutoff size between small and large kidney tumours. We immediately went into action and called our regional medical centre. We were fortunate to get an appointment within a week to meet with the urology oncologist surgeon. Phew, sigh of relief. Our sigh of relief was premature because the surgeon explained to my husband that he will have to wait at least 3 months for surgery. Why? Because the hospitals need to keep beds open for COVID. Later, she stated that they needed to keep ventilators in reserve.
Yes.
And the ventilator part is odd to me because I thought ventilators were harmful to most COVID patients.
That's what she, the letter writer
says. That's the letter writer says. And it goes on. And basically, she is in this situation where she's saying, my husband is 46. He's in the prime of his life and he can be cured with surgery, but he can't get surgery. We live in Maryland. They don't live in darkest whereverville. They don't, as President Trump would say, they don't live in the darkest shithole country. They live in the United States of America, yeah, in Maryland. The Maryland Hospital Association stated that pre-COVID, on average, 82% of state hospital beds would be in use at any given time.
And now
she's sitting there with her husband with this very treatable situation, yes, with a tumour that's growing and it's small, but it won't be small for long, and she has to wait 3 months. And that is just irredeemable. So can I just say, we need something cheerful now because I think it's the right thing. So I have advice for the day. I think people should watch less news. Obviously, you need to watch listen to our virus every day.
Our podcast,
which at the Anne and Phelan Scoop. And you can also, by the way, donate to the unreportedstorysociety.com, unreportedstorysociety.com. And we do need your help to keep doing what we do. But here's my advice to you. You need to watch less news. Don't watch so much cable news. Listen to us. And instead, I would suggest talking to a 2 or 3 year old is particularly good for alleviating anxiety and for distracting you, extraordinarily so. And by the way, I think almost any child works in this category. We particularly are fond of a particular boy who's going to be 3 tomorrow. But we would say that, he's 3 today. He's 3 today, actually, we haven't seen him yet. And you need to talk to that 3-year-old. We'll be talking to our special 3-year-old about why cake and ice cream cannot be eaten until after dinner. And big, big, massive issues like that.
And know that you cannot eat dinner for breakfast.
And knowing that ice cream cannot be consumed in the morning. And then
remember he said he wanted the ice cream.
He wanted his cake.
And he was told you can have it only after dinner. And at 8 a.m. in the morning, he woke up and says, can we have dinner now?
So dealing with that kind of rationality and dealing with that kind of
single-mindedness,
the focus of it is very, very good. And it's so focused and the questioning is so tight and so rigorous. It's like the interrogation from that 3-year-old looking for reasons why you can't have ice cream right now is a cure, I think, actually a cure for cancer. The other thing I would suggest that I think is actually really good is I read recipes at night and I look at the photographs, sort of food porn. And what's really nice, what I'm loving is I read the New York Times. We obviously subscribe to the New York Times and read the New York Times so you don't have to. Yes. One of the most delightful aspects of the New York Times is that they have this very nice repository of recipes. And in the repository of recipes, they have these comments. The comments are priceless. So here's the kind of thing that happens. They'll have a recipe for like a stew. And then in the comments section, and then it'll be, by the way, I'll see, there'll be like 8,000 stars saying this is the best recipe ever. Then people write in the comments section and they say basically in the comments section, you know, I'd have added this, I'd have added that, I'd have taken away this, I'd have put in this, I'd have done this and whatever. And then people write in and say, if you don't cook it as shown, then post your own recipe. And people get really... Yeah.
And I love this one here. I love this one, this comment. I think many of the negative comments from people who have no idea what an old-time stew tasted like. They probably have McDonald's taste buds and there's no changing that. This was a wonderful stew, you know?
With that said, you know, I also added... Yeah. And then she added to it, you know?
Yeah, but
there's another one. I love this one, you know? So, you know, somebody said, I did this. I roasted some mushrooms. I took out that. I cooked the whole thing first. I added some potatoes. And the person, Barbara, then wrote, Yeah, so basically a completely different recipe. Yeah. So they get this kind of, like, there's this real aggressive thing that goes on and this kind of back and forth. But the passion with which people talk about food and recipes and substitutions and how to cook things mm-hmm. is the most amazing cure for pandemic fatigue. Yeah. And then we have a quote of the day. I want to finish with a quote of the day, and I got this from our friends at Lockdown Skeptics, who we need to have back on again. We need to have Toby back on again, Toby Young. But the quote of the day is, it's easier to fool people than to convince them that they have been fooled. Mm. Mark Twain.
Yeah. So it's easier to fool people than to convince them they have been fooled.
It's very easier good. To fool people than to convince them that they've been fooled. I like it.
Well, you won't be fooled.
You'll be fooled here, here.
No fooling here.
No fooling here. Yes. All the truth, all the time.
Yes.
And also fun, too, by the way.
At the unreportedstorysociety.com, you can donate there not to be fooled.
At the unreportedstorysociety.com. And by the way, really thank you for all the really nice comments. And keep them coming.
Please
and
keep them coming. And the ratings. We really
and the ratings are really important.
On the iPod app.
And share this. And share this this podcast with other people who you think need to be cheered up today. And we wish you well wherever you are. What an awful time.
And tomorrow, the Alan Phelan Scoop, the weekly show, is coming up. We've got an amazing interview
really
with the founding father of the conservative movement.
Richard
the
Vigory.
The most youthful 87-year-old we know, and a great interview.
And lots of other good stuff, actually, and lots of review, and lots of potential things to watch and stream and all that.
Yes.
Anyway, we're going to stop for right now. Have a great day.
Have a great Tuesday.
We'll talk to you tomorrow.
All the best. Bye.
Bye.